The reading is Psalm 93, which you can follow on page 598 in the Bibles on your table. The Lord reigns. He is robed in majesty. The Lord is robed. He has put on strength as his belt. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. Your throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting. The floods have lifted up, O Lord. The floods have lifted up their voice. The floods lift up their roaring. Mightier than the thunders of many waters, mightier than the waves of the sea, the Lord on high is mighty. Your decrees are very trustworthy. Holiness befits your house, O Lord, forevermore.
Please do keep that open in front of you. It's on page 598. Can I add my welcome to Doug's? It's great to be with you here this lunchtime. Psalm 93. I was indeed a medical student at Barts Hospital just along the road from here. And while I was a medical student, I first read this book called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, written by Professor Oliver Sacks, who is a famous neurologist. It's a series of true case studies. And in one chapter called On the Level, he tells the case of one Mr. McGregor. He was a man who had a neurological condition, which meant that he permanently leant 20 degrees to the left, unbeknown to himself. He always tilted over to one side. And this chapter in the book tells the story of how Professor Sacks made Mr. McGregor a pair of glasses. And across the top of the pair of glasses, he put a spirit level, so that as Mr. McGregor was walking along, he could look at the top of his glasses and kind of straighten up as he walked. Well, the message of Psalm 93 is in many ways a simple one. It comes in the first three words of that psalm. Can you see it there, Psalm 93? The Lord reigns. It's a message that comes again through the next few psalms, all the way up to Psalm 100. Turn over the page, and you'll see the first three words of Psalm 97 are exactly the same. The Lord reigns. Psalm 99, a bit further down the page. The Lord reigns. But it's a message that we will need to use, a bit like Mr. McGregor, as the kind of spirit level in our mental glasses, so that we can straighten up our thinking. Because every day we're bombarded by messages, aren't we? Today, as with every day of your life, you will see 2,000 adverts. And we'll be bombarded by city opinions, we'll be bombarded by those city rumours. And our thinking starts to get tilted, almost unknowingly sometimes. It starts to get skewed. That's why this psalm claims we need to look at the monarch over all of these things and straighten up our thinking. We need to make sure that we are on the level, theologically and spiritually. Although God's people could be forgiven at the time that the Psalms were written, they could be forgiven for being cynical about monarchs. If you were here last week, you would have heard from Wes about Psalm 90 and how we got to this point in the book of Psalms. Just in case you weren't here, let me remind you of the story of the book of Psalms so far. Psalm 2, right back at the beginning, is a job description for the perfect king. The one who reigns, the one who gives refuge. A king who it would be mad not to trust in. But as successive human kings have come and gone in Israel's history, they have failed to get the job done over and over again until the damning end of year review in Psalm 89, which is the lowest possible point of all the Psalms. That's the end of book 3. The people are in exile. God has judged his people, and he has declared human kings to be unfit for purpose. That's why this summer we're looking at Book 4 together, starting with Psalm 90. And what we learned from that psalm was that what God's people need is a mediator, an ultimate defense lawyer, a bit like Moses. Do you remember? And then what we're going to see this week is that what God's people really need in Psalm 93 is the wisdom to look to a king who really reigns, a king who will be successful, a king who will do what he is supposed to do. So we're going to look at Psalm 93 under three headings, three summary statements. The first one is this, and it covers verses 1 and 2. The Lord reigns in every location. The Lord reigns in every location. If you look down at verses 1 and 2, you'll see that we're in a throne room. That's the picture. But here there's no Annie Leibovitz taking snaps. There's no monarch taking off his or her crown. There's no mention of the clothes being dressy. No, it's just a picture of a strikingly powerful king. Let me read out verses 1 and 2 again. The Lord reigns. That's Lord in capital letters. That means the God who makes promises and keeps them, the God of the covenant. He is robed in majesty. The Lord is robed. He has put on strength as his belt. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. Literally, that's one word. Just says, immovable. Your throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting. Did you notice the king's robes in verse 1? Not just majestic, not just reflecting the trappings of majesty, but actually made of majesty. Around his waist. It says literally that the Lord's belt is made of strength. You see, here is no constitutional monarch. Here is no token royalty. This king has real power. He has bite. Oh, and he's a king, that the language tells us, who is prepared to fight. In his portrait, it's a bit like he's wearing two things at the same time, sumptuous velvet royal robes and a suit of armor. He's a king who reigns and a king who fights. Well, going to the Tate or the National Gallery, you'll find any number of portraits of kings and queens. And underneath, you'll find a caption telling you where that monarch ruled and their dates. Have a look at the caption in this psalm to the picture of the monarch. What is the location of his kingdom? You expect, don't you, to get out your atlas, to get it down from the shelf, and to find some small irregular area coloured in pink. That's why the rest of verse 1 takes your breath away. The world is established. You can put away your atlas. This God is for everywhere. Think about it for a second. There are no borders to his kingdom. There are no superpowers outside of his control. Muslim, Hindu countries, they are all included. His kingdom is endless. And what does it say in verse 1? It cannot be moved. There's no vulnerability here to boredom takeovers. No vulnerability to terrorism or the US subprime markets. There is stability in this God's world. We can see it, can't we? In everything from the laws of physics to the laws of right and wrong. We think that's normality. No, that is in itself an expression of this stable king's worldwide rule. And if that's his territory, what about his dates? Henry VIII ruled from 1509 to 1547. I didn't know that. I had to look that up on Google this morning. What about this king in verse 2? Your throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting. Or verse 5. Holiness befits your house, O Lord, forevermore. See, this isn't a new God on the block. This isn't a God who's frightened of a successor. There will never be another God on this worldwide throne. So there's stability about the future, I take it. Whatever our fears about global warming or nuclear warfare, this king's eternal rule will continue, and it will be God who brings the world to an end. Psalm 96 tells us that, if you want to have a look at that later on. The Lord reigns in every location. But you see, as well as reassurance, there is also a warning. Because this God lays claim to all of time and all of space. And we need to ask ourselves whether we really acknowledge that, whether we truly acknowledge the reign of this king in his throne room, in every location, in every instance of time in our lives. I was reading Evelyn Waugh's diaries the other day, and he says on a couple of occasions that he feels that he lives his life in watertight compartments. I guess that's even more true of us in the 21st century. Is there a danger that our lives are so compartmentalized that we limit, or at least we try and limit, God's reign to one particular area? Maybe in church, but not in the office. Maybe at home, but not at the club. Or maybe we try and limit God in terms of time. Do you do that? What about our holidays? Do we think of those as time off from being a Christian? Do we tend to kind of divide our lives into God time and then a bit of me time? You see, God lays claim to every location and every day of history. And you know, we need to keep fixing our minds on that so that, like Mr. McGregor, we can keep our minds on the level every time we start to drift sideways as Christians. Because, you know, the more certain we are that the Lord reigns, the more we will want to live under his rule. Well, it's possible that you're sitting there and thinking, Jeremy, that's very well, but life isn't all that straightforward. Travel to Peru this morning. Talk to the family of that murdered East London toddler. Interview someone on the cancer ward down the road at the Royal London. And it's far from obvious that God is on the throne, that he's in control. Well, if that's the way you feel like responding, the Bible's got there first. Have a look at verses 3 and 4. We're giving them the working title. The Lord reigns over every enemy. Doug mentioned that we used to live down in Eastbourne. And there were some times during the winter when there were big storms that the waves used to crash in so strongly that the ground used to shake. And that's the picture in verses 3 and 4. We're down at the beach. And big waves normally come in threes, so I'm told. And you can see the way that the threes stack up in the psalm in repetition. Let me read out verses 3 and 4. The floods, by the way, in the Bible often represent the forces of evil. Verse 3, the floods have lifted up, O Lord. The floods have lifted up their voice. The floods lift up their roaring. Mightier than the thunders of many waters, mightier than the waves of the sea. The Lord on high is mighty. Now the picture here is of the force of opposition against God. Every day on the news in our lives, we witness a pounding attack on God's rule. And it's not just the tsunamis and the hurricanes and the floods in Tewkesbury. Now every day, some of us get caught up in those cross currents. We take a pounding, even in God's world, in his kingdom. The first thing we do is ask the why question, isn't it? Why has it happened to me? In actual fact, the book of Psalms often asks that same why question. Have a look at Psalm 88 later on if you're in any doubt. But back here in Psalm 93, notice that we're simply reminded that whatever we go through, the Lord still reigns. It's not a complete answer to suffering, is it? But it is a real one. So on Monday, one of our Christian friends, the same age as me, phoned us up. She's got two children. She'd had a random blood test taken by her GP, which showed that she had advanced leukemia. The news came totally out of the blue for her and her family. What was the verse that she read to us over the phone? A verse from Romans. Sometimes I know use glibly, but not in this case. We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. You see, even when the breakers come crashing in, God's rule is unassailable. The Lord reigns. That's the take-home message. The Lord reigns in every location and over every enemy. Will you trust those things? Are you going to straighten up your thinking? Thirdly and briefly, from verse 5, the Lord reigns through every word, through every word he speaks. And here the picture is not of the throne room. We're no longer down on the beach. We're in the temple. Verse 5. Your decrees are very trustworthy. Holiness befits your house. House there means the temple. O Lord, forevermore. You see, whatever the pounding from God's enemies, his words still stand as firm as he does. As God stays firm in his temple. God's words are trustworthy because God is trustworthy. They are constant because God is constant. And it is fitting, isn't it, as we approach this king who rules, that we should behave in the way that he requires. His laws, you see, are engraved in stone. They'll never change. Whatever the situation in time and space, whatever the situation of attack, godliness still applies. Holiness is always in fashion for a Christian. God's laws are for us to obey. Will we remember that and straighten up our thinking? You see, as they read the book of Psalms, God's people had to realize that what they needed to get them out of the mess they were in was a mediator. We saw that last week in Psalm 90. Human kingship had failed. And what they needed was not just a mediator, but a king, a Lord who reigned. And the tragedy is that when that king came, saying of himself, the kingdom of God is near, in Mark chapter 1, so many people rejected his rule. Except a few people, maybe, in Mark 4, who watched him on a boat in a storm with the waves raging against him, and they saw him speak words to the storm with royal authority. Peace. Be still. And it says in Mark 4 that the disciples were filled with great fear, and they said to one another, who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? A few people maybe acknowledge this king who were gathered around the cross in Mark 15. where this king, who has just taken off a purple robe, now dies under the title the King of the Jews. Psalm 93 would say, yes, he is the king who reigns. He is God's king. He is the one robed in majesty. He is the one who one day people will acknowledge as the Lamb on the throne as they sing, Hallelujah, for the Lord God Almighty reigns. Well, we're going to think more about that king next week as we look at Psalm 102 together. But in the meantime, we're going to have a few minutes break to think about Psalm 93. We're going to have a chance for questions. So you'll find some pieces of paper on your table. Please do use those pieces of paper if you'd like to jot down some questions. We're going to have a bit of a break for coffee now for 4 or 5 minutes. Someone will come round to the tables, pick up the sheets of paper, and then we'll discuss what some of the answers might be. Thank you. Okay, if I could just break into your conversations. We've got one question here. Any more questions? It's not too late to write them down if any occur to you. Otherwise, I'll set you a question that you can discuss around your tables. A really helpful question, though. And it goes like this. How can we help people practically believe this psalm without being cliched if they're going through a painful time? That's an important question, isn't it? Because we could be heartless if we simply say to someone who's struggling, the Lord reigns, the Lord reigns. Simply acknowledge it. That's true. I think it comes back to the character of the God who is on the throne. If you were here last week, you might remember that God is a God of steadfast love. Do you remember Psalm 90? Turn back to that. Psalm 90, verse 14. We've been looking throughout that psalm at God's rightness in judgment, God's rightful wrath, the fact that our lives are going to end. And yet, Psalm 90, verse 14, satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. So God is a God of steadfast love, and I think we're going to see next week that God is also a God who comes to earth and suffers in the person of Jesus Christ. So God is not a God who is immune to suffering. God is a God who, in some senses, experiences suffering. So I guess that as we come alongside people who are going through difficult times, we want to explain to them that God is both a God who is in control, but his rule is a loving one. And that God himself understands suffering because Jesus Christ himself suffered. So Psalm 93 is put in context for a reason, isn't it? And we may want to use that reason as we explain the God who helps comes alongside. But the God who is really able to help because he is in control. Any more questions at all on that? Well, we've got just a couple of minutes left. Perhaps you could just discuss on your tables for 2 or 3 minutes how practically your life would look different if you were aware all of the time that the Lord was in control. And then secondly, you might want to have a brief look at Psalm 94 and ask yourself, how does Psalm 94 apply some of the principles of Psalm 93? So firstly, if you were aware all of the time that the Lord was in control, how would your life be different? Secondly, how does Psalm 94 apply some of the principles of Psalm 93? Then we'll finish about 10:02, and we'll spend some time praying. Thank you.